13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club in Portland. February 12th will feature a workshop called Healing Ourselves to Raise Our Future and a performance by spoken word artist S. Renee Mitchell. February 13th will feature workshops on topics ranging from becoming an MC to healthy living to information on going to Africa. That evening, the summit will close with a youth talent showcase. Again, that's the Portland Youth Summit, February 12th and 13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club, 5250 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kbo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Help us celebrate the 10-year anniversary of the Confessional Radio Show with Contessa de la Luna. We have performances by Contessa de la Luna herself, Remy Fasolatido, Mike Crenshaw, and many more. We have plenty of audience participation, including human shadow puppet theater, animal impersonation contests, and prizes. And don't miss our David Bowie Kazoo tribute. All that and more, Thursday, February 11th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Tickets are $10 for an entire night of music, mayhem, laughs, and surprises. All proceeds benefit KBOO Community Radio. Tickets available now in advance at brownpapertickets.com or at the door. Join us Thursday, February 11th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. See you there.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Clinton Street 3rd Annual Mardi Gras Festival, Tuesday, February 9th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. This annual celebration features the Les Blake Mardi Gras films Dry Wood and Always for Pleasure, as well as food, costumes, music, and more. Again, that's the 3rd Annual Mardi Gras Fat Tuesday celebration, February 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Love somehow. I'm through playing with fire.
Playing is Interstellar Dub by DJ Mad from Portland label Zam Zam Sounds. I'm Andre Middleton and this is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. I'll be hosting Art Focus on Tuesday mornings from 11:30 to noon on a bi-weekly basis, alternating with the fantastic Joseph Galavan. Thank you for joining us. Our guest today is Portland's own Sean Krogan. But first up, some local art news. PSU MFA Studio Lecture Series presents James Luna tonight, February 9th from 7 o'clock, Lincoln Hall, room 75. It's free and open to the public at the Portland State campus. And we were thrilled to have Mr. Luna as a recent guest on this program, so if you caught that episode, this may be a great opportunity to meet the artist in person. The Southeast Area Art Walk is a free self-guided walking tour. You'll visit studios, home workspaces, galleries, host homes, and businesses within the walkable and bikeable, busable boundaries of Southeast Portland from 9th Avenue up to Southeast 41st, Southeast Powell, all the way over to Hawthorne Boulevard. This event is happening Saturday and Sunday, March 5th and 6th from 10 to 5 p.m. The Hillsborough Art and Culture Council is offering their professional development and networking series now through April. The next workshop that happens tomorrow is a grant workshop at the Walters Cultural Center at 527 East Main Street in Hillsborough, Oregon. Scholarships are available to Washington County residents only. Please visit hillsborougharts.org to learn more. BRAC is offering an arts equity grant opportunity that is now open to nonprofit organizations that are providing arts and culture programs and services for marginalized communities. including geographically underserved neighborhoods, communities of color, immigrants, refugees, persons with disabilities, LGBTQ communities, and other underrepresented populations that are based here in Portland or Multnomah County. To begin the application process, organizations should submit a letter of intent online at racculturalarts.org by February 24th at 5 o'clock. Well, my guest today may be familiar to many listeners here at KBOO as a member of several local Portland-based bands like Cracker Bash, Junior High, and the Pinnacles. In addition to his musical talents, he also has a he's also pretty handy with a pencil and a brush.
Very generous.
His most current body of work explores our detrimental relationship with fear and how it disables us. His show titled The Wages of Fear can be seen at the Union Knot Gallery. It is an honor and my pleasure to welcome Sean Krogan to this week's Art Focus. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you very much, Andre.
Well, like I said, I've known you for years.
Yes.
I've been a big fan. And let's just start off. Let's just get right to it. Fear.
Yeah.
As a performer, I can only imagine the fears that you've had to confront over the years. What was the aha moment for you on the issue of fear that you wanted to share with those who get to see this body of work?
I think what inspired a lot of these paintings was the political climate right now initially, and then the more I thought about fear in general, I kind of just spilled over into my own relationship with fear and as a society, you know, our relationship with fear. So, I mean, initially I believe it was just like, you know, watching people being terrified by the news and watching that fear play on them in a unhealthy way.
It's interesting you put it the way, because it seems to me that our relationship with fear has definitely, I don't want to, metastasize isn't the right word, but I remember that part of the American aesthetic was, or Western aesthetic, was how do we overcome fear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it seems to me that a lot of people are actually capitalizing on it in a way that seems very foreign from the greatest generation of World War II, and,
right,
for example.
I think it's been a ongoing change in our society for a long time. I mean, I think as soon as marketers learned that you could use fear against people to sell products, then it became something that not only politicians use, but, you know, corporations would use to sell whatever they were selling.
Right.
So, you know,
right,
you get scared of being old, so, you know, you better wear this makeup. You get scared of this, so you better take that. You get, and it just goes on down the line. So we get to a point where, you know, we're terrified of people we know nothing about, and we're trying to lock our borders and all sorts of racial hatred that is, you know, I guess has always maybe been there, but it's become very visual in the past couple of years.
Right.
No. So it's scary. It's fearful. It creates fear in me to see what's happening to us as a society.
Right. You've been, like I said, in a variety of bands, and music has definitely been a big part of how you've shared your experience and your perspective with our community. What motivated you to decide to put pen and brush to paper and wood and canvas in a manner that was more than just a hobby?
There was a couple events that took place. One, my father died, and he had always been a big supporter of my artistic endeavors, whatever it was, and always kind of pushed me to keep on working on those and to perfect them. And I know that in his life, he had always wanted to spend more time being an artist and working on art, and he never really gave himself that time. So I saw, you know, with his passing and me getting to be closer to middle age, I was like, I didn't want to wind up being like him and looking back and like, wow, I never really tried to do that, and I never took it seriously. It was always just something I did as a hobby. And then honestly, the other thing that happened was I saw the Metallica documentary, Some Kind of Monster, and there's lots of scenes of Lars showing off his Basquiats, and it reminded me how much I love that kind of style of work and folk art in general, folk art as well as, you know, street art. And I was like, wow, like I love that. And as a kid, I really wanted to be involved with that. And I was like, all right, now's the moment. I'm gonna start working on this all the time. And so I kind of did the thing that I never did with my music. I don't think my dad was always practice your scales, learn your chord progressions, and work. And I was always like, whatever, Dad, I'm a punk rock musician. I don't need to work. It'll just come naturally. But, you know, it's the truth. If you want to get better at something, you have to work at it. And so I decided like I had to draw every day. And every, you know, if I have a free moment, pick up a pencil and doodle. And so it was just, you know, and the more I've done it, the more it's become something that I'm really serious about.
Nice. It's funny that was your, that was one of the entry points, because one of my questions I wanted to ask you was that, even though I am not a big fan of comparing one artist's work to another for the sake of, as a way of describing it, I did get a real sense of some of the, I guess, parallels with artists like Keith Haring or Kenny Schroff. How, having said that, and you mentioned it briefly, how has street art and graffiti had an impact on your aesthetic?
Oh, it's had a giant impact on my aesthetic. I mean, that kind of art, as well as like folk artists, you know, who in the American South and Southwest, and it's people's art in a lot of ways. You know, even though those artists that you named got elevated to high art, you know, fine art, it started as a street movement. And coming from my background in punk rock, you know, growing up in the late 70s and early 80s, and having exposure to kind of DIY movements, and then seeing hip hop culture growing up in New York, and, you know, affixed to that was graffiti art, street art. And that for us was a major impact. My friends that I grew up with that out in Gresham, pretty soon we were painting on any building that we could out there. I name all these famous artists, but like a lot of my influences came from those kids that I hung out with and their work, and what they were far better artists than me at the time, and a lot more free and a lot more open to new ideas. So, you know, translated through my friends,
right,
I got to see a lot of that New York street culture. So
it's funny. I'm going to quote a friend of mine, David Walker, who you probably know as well.
Yes.
David remarked to me a little while ago is that, you know, the people that I am still in touch with are the people that are still making their art. You mm-hmm. know, how, you know, back in the day, we all, you know, we're full of piss and vinegar. Hey, we're going to take on the world and share. But, you know, there has been a winnowing, or even, dare I say, you know, a thinning of the herd, because people had, you know, they got jobs, they got married, they moved away, you know, they had kids and all that. But there's something to be said for having your art be such a part of you that there's a compulsion to continue to do it, whether you're getting paid for it or not, whether you're in a gallery or not. And I'm hearing a thread of that to say, you know, I found a passion in this and I'm just doing it and I'm doing it and I'm doing it and I'm doing it and I'm doing it.
I hope I'm doing it like till the day I die. I mean, and I think you're right. I think when we're kids, you know, you come into this and you have a bunch of ideas and a bunch of energy, and then, you know, the realities of work life and family life and all of that. You know, if you're going to be a serious family person, that's what has to be your priority. So,
right.
You know, I'm in the position where I don't really have to worry about that. I never had kids, and I decided I never wanted to have a career in anything that would kind of hold me back from following my pursuits.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a sacrifice in and of itself, you know. But it's one that I chose. It wasn't thrust upon me. So I feel lucky that I could kind of keep on doing this, and I don't have those barriers to kind of stop me from, like, all right, I got to get up this morning and I have to paint for an hour before I go to work. And when I get home from work, hopefully I'll have enough energy to get some drawing in and start all over the next day, you know. I guess to get to your question, as we get older, you know, your priorities become different, and you have to really kind of decide that this is what you want out of life.
Right.
And the people I know that became successful in music from this town were those people who really did that. And I know for a long time I kind of fell out of music because I wasn't really to do the work. So, and therefore, you know, I suffered for it, and I got, and I stopped playing shows, and I stopped getting asked to play shows. So I've learned from my own, you know.
It's a journey.
It's a journey, yeah.
It's a journey.
And hopefully, you know, you learn something from it. You don't just get to the end of it. You're just like, oh no, like, dang, I never did that thing. I forgot. Shoot.
That thing. Oh, that thing.
Yeah. Like I was gonna write the great American novel right. or whatever.
Speaking of that thing, we are surrounded here in the Pacific Northwest and with legends, fables, and myths, you know, how the names of mountains, the names of rivers. I think it's fair to say that your work in its most raw form shares some elements with those myths and with those fables. There's a certain, not just accessibility to it to anybody that may see it, but there's a mystery behind it. There's a bit of a veil that I don't get it on the first seeing. I maybe not get it in the second seeing, but by the third or fourth exposure to your work, whether it's drawing or you know, your current work, Wages of Fear, there is a thread.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, because I come from a music background and also like my parents were involved with theater, there's always like a storytelling that's going on. And I think that's one of the key things about art. I think art is supposed to speak to you and tell the story, and that which is the story of what it's like to be a human being.
Right.
And, you know, I think if you stop telling that story, it just becomes decorative art, which I guess is all very fine and dandy, but I don't think it's really fulfilling its function in society. And so in my work, I really want to get to those stories, whatever they might be. You know, I did a whole series of paintings about being in traffic and the individual, like who's in the car, and the car is a symbol of the body that we all have our little cars that we drive around in all day long. And, you know, we're all trapped inside of them. And so, and what does that mean? And, you know, what's going on inside of all those little cars? And, or this current, you know, body of work about the wages, like what do we earn? What do we get from our fear? What are we buying with that? Or like I do a lot of work that is influenced by Native American art, especially Native American art from this region. I grew up in the Portland area. I grew up in Gresham in Portland, and I was exposed to that art at an early age. And I was fortunate to go to public school at a time where those kind of topics were talked about. We talked right. a lot about the people that used to live here, and so I had at a young age, I was really fascinated with the idea of a culture that was predominant here for thousands and thousands of years. And basically, there's not a lot of evidence of it being here. You know, I mean, we did as immigrants ourselves, we did a good job of erasing a lot of that. So I was fascinated by that mystery. Like, what were these people like? What was their lives like? What were their cultures like? And so, you know, I mean, we are fortunate that there's a lot of that culture is represented in the art museums here in town and around the region. So I want to kind of retell those stories through the eyes of like a suburban kid who kind of half knew them.
And it's funny you put it that way, because I've remarked on this program and other times that, you know, my affinity and respect and love for Indigenous art, I think is rooted in the notion that art that was created by Indigenous people, it wasn't as commercial as it is at artists today. And that's not to say that people shouldn't earn a living from their art, but I think that a lot of, dare I say, third world brown culture, they create art because it's a part of their lives. You know, whether they're painting something on the inside of where they live, or they're crafting a tool, or they're crafting a weapon, you know, they put a level of who they are and who their culture is. So you just see it everywhere.
Oh, I think it's that, you know, it's they're really fulfilling the function of art. Those right. things that they're making are the real reasons why art was initially created, whether it's like, you know, a cave painting or a Venus, you know, carving.
Exactly.
It's like these are getting to the psychology of these people, and it's telling their story. You know, it's talking about their fears and their hopes and,
right.
and what it is to be a human being in that culture. So I think is really important,
yes.
you know? So I'm when I'm telling my Native American stories through my eyes or mistold, it's trying to get to like who we are as a people, and I'm just using those as symbols to kind of like, cause you know, it makes it easier for me to say like, hey, like we're a society that, you know, instead of me saying we're a society that lives in fear
right.
and look how messed up we are as a people and look how, messed up you are as an individual, like to say, no one wants to hear that kind of, you know, message, get it thrust in their face. So, but if you say, look, this story, I'm going to tell you a story.
Right.
And people love stories. I mean, it's that, that makes that, that, bitter pill a little bit easier to take. And you kind of like, you know, like you said, it absorbs, you absorb it slowly and over time.
So in this new digital age, I first saw your work online. You have you're very prolific and you've got a pretty big Facebook space. How do you think that has had an impact on what you make? I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, hey, you know, if you've got a large wall that you've got to paint for a gallery, you know, on a semi-annual basis. I know a lot of people that are professional artists that are in galleries and they're working for their two shows every year, you know, and they may do a commission here or there, but you're working for a space that you've created that you have access to whenever you want. How has that impacted your output, your creativity, your aesthetic?
Well, in one way, it's made it very easy for me to get my art out to the people. You know, it's having this open forum where you don't have to get to the gallery. So because I like to do a lot of things, sometimes my attention span will be fairly short. And so I'll work on a piece and it's like, all right, this piece is going to take me like 2 hours to do. And, you know, that way is like, as soon as it's done, instead of waiting for me to build a larger body of work, I could just, I could like, all right, to my Facebook friends or whoever, you know, here it is. You could check it out now and comment on it. And a lot of times that helps me because it's like, all right, what's working and what do people like and what's connecting with people? What are they, you know, what are they taking from this?
Right. So, you're getting that feedback.
Right. I mean, the Wages of Fear, the Wages of Fear show really happened because I did a couple pieces and I posted them and people reacted really strongly to them, especially when I asked the question, like, what are the wages of fear? And so I get a response right away, and people were telling me what the wages of fear were. And that, that, you know, definitely acted as inspiration for me. So I like that, that contact with humanity, that immediate contact. A lot of my work that I make, I just do in coffee shops. Because I will work on smaller pieces, I could just kind of drag stuff around with me. And because I use lots of, I'm not using like brush, I'm using like paint pens and and pencils and wax pencils. I could just kind of drag it around wherever I go and produce and photograph it right then and there. And oftentimes I'll just leave it behind. Sometimes it's like, you know, all right, I'm working on this, but, you know, not everything I make is something that, that has to be sold.
Right.
Sometimes it just has to be made.
Nice. And just to let our audience know, and I should have done this sooner, you can find such a large amount of Sean's work at facebook.com, Sean Krogan Art. That's all one word, Sean Krogan Art. It's an amazing treasure trove of a wide variety of work that, like I said, the thread is definitely there, and it's easy to see. So another question I wanted to talk about was, to my eye, and this is to my eye, your work confronts quite a few contrasting elements. For example, the optimism of youthfulness versus the realism of adult hindsight. Your work seems to look back and in an unflinching way. So from your viewpoint, what are some of the opposing forces within your work?
Well, I mean, I think you really called it. And if I was to talk to a counselor about it, I'm sure they'd have a lot of interesting things to say. But it's, it really is like we live in a society that that really idolizes youthfulness. And I think we all kind of fall victim to, like, you know, trying to stay eternally 19 or whatever. And I think definitely growing up in this very insular environment of what Portland used to be, where it was a fairly cheap place to live, inexpensive place to live and get by, and you could pretty much, like, you know, work part-time. So it definitely kind of gave you, you could be a kid for a long time in this town or in this country, you know, more so than you could in other places. And so, you know, I think I definitely fell victim to that, you know, so, and especially since I don't have kids, and I don't have a college education I have to pay off.
Right.
I have a lot of freedom just to go around and be a knucklehead. And I did that for a long time, I think, you know, and arriving at age 50, you know, you suddenly start to look backwards and forwards, you know, and I think that it was suddenly like, oh, like there's certain responsibilities that come with being an adult that right. I never had to really confront.
And those responsibilities know? That are not limited to family.
They're not exactly. limited to family.
Right, right. I mean,
no.
I mean, you in a large way are a repository of the experiences that you've had.
Right.
And I think there is, especially when you're part of a community like Portland is, there are so many ways for you to share that knowledge and to share that experience despite or you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Oh, no, totally. I mean, I think for a long time I became very much a hermit. I was, you know, filled with self-loathing and partly probably because I was like, you know, a teenager living in a grown-up's body.
Right.
And so I just kind of hid away from the world for a long time until I kind of realized like, hey, like, you know, your job as a human being is to make connections in this world. And it's not connections so you can make money necessarily, but it's connections so that hopefully you could raise your own consciousness and the consciousness of others around you. So,
and I love the way you put that. And for, I mean, I'm just really getting excited here because you can tell, because for a lot of people in our society, the goal of life is to earn money so we can pass that money down to our kids.
Right.
But what I'm hearing is that what really needs to be the goal in life is to pass on our experiences, not so much to our kids, but to other members of our society.
As well as our children.
Right,
yeah.
As well
and,
our children.
You know, and that's why they always say it takes a village to raise
right.
a kid. There's these tropes we hear, you know, sometimes like, oh, there's a meaning behind that other than just like, you know, it looks good on a t-shirt.
Right.
It's, yeah, I think the more that I get out of my house and the more that I interact with lots of people and I start to have conversations, whether about fear or whether about, you know, origins of the universe, whatever it might be, just to one, it activates my own mind.
Right.
And two, like, it's like, hopefully we're making connections so we realize like, hey, like, as a species, like, we really do count on each other and, you know, and all that hippy dippy stuff about love is like, it's important.
There's something there.
There's something there, you know,
there.
Like,
right.
So yeah, I think that I'm as a human being, I'm trying to get back to growth again instead of stasis. And
well, keeping with that theme or keeping with that thought of sharing, you are a working artist in a city that is going through a profound amount of change right now. And that is having, obviously, a disparate impact on the arts community in particular. Do you have any advice as we wrap this up to young people or to new people who are moving to Portland or growing up in Portland that are really finding that they need to share their experience through a variety of mediums, whether it be music, visual arts. But what is some advice that you might give to someone?
Well, I mean, you know, get out and talk with people, communicate. And one of the things that, you know, I've definitely learned as I got older is like, as much as I think I might have something to say, if you listen, you'll get a lot farther. And the people that I know in my life that were good listeners have definitely advanced a lot farther than the people I know that were good talkers.
Uh-huh.
So, because as I get older, I'm definitely trying to become a better listener. So listen to the people around you who know what they're talking about and, you know, whatever they're doing, you know. And I don't know, I feel bad for people who are trying to get into art right now in this town. It's super competitive. There's a lot of artists here, a lot more than there ever was in the past that I remember.
Right.
And it's gotten really expensive. So it's a difficult thing. I mean, I'll see you in Gresham.
Yeah. No.
I mean, you know,
and
I, you know, the easy life that we had for a long time in this town is part of the past.
And, oh yeah.
And
yeah.
As much as I don't like a lot of it, it's just like, you also have to be realistic about the fact that this is a really popular place.
It is.
And there's a reason why I never moved away from this place, because it is one of the most beautiful places
it really, really is.
In the world. But you did not hear me say that if you're listening someplace far, far away right now, you want to stay where you're at and make your own community as brilliant as Portland is.
Exactly. My guest today was Sean Krogan. He has a show called Wages of Fear at the Union Knot Gallery over in off of MLK, between Union, or the intersection of what used to be called Union and Knot.
MLK and Knot.
Sean, thank you so much for joining us today.
No, the pleasure has been mine, definitely. Thank you.
I had a great time. Cable listeners, thank you so much for joining us today as well. Before we go, just want to remind you that you can find photos, links, as well as our guest info on our show page. That's at KBOO.FM/ArtFocus. Please follow the link and like us on Facebook. You'll get more information there as well. Don't forget, we've got James Luna tonight at Portland State, 7 o'clock, Lincoln Hall, room 75. It's free and open to the public. The Southeast Area Art Walk is happening. Visit studios, home, workspaces, galleries, host homes, and businesses within the walkable, bikeable, and busable boundaries of Southeast 9th, 41st, Powell, and Hawthorne Boulevard. The event is happening Saturday, Sunday, March 5th and 6th. You've got some time to plan ahead. The Hillsborough Art and Culture Council is offering their professional development and networking series now through April. Next workshop is a grants workshop tomorrow, February 10th, at the Walters Cultural Center at 527 East Main Street in Hillsborough, Oregon. Scholarships are available to Washington County residents only. Please visit hillsborougharts.org to learn more. The Arts Equity Opportunity Now is also happening. So, if you missed any part of today's show, there will be a podcast of the show online later this afternoon. Once again, we're going out to the music of Danny Skrilla from Portland's own Zam Zam Sounds. Take care and peace.
Muy buenas tardes, esto es Tania Gómez Daza para KBOO News. A continuación, un corte informativo en español para el día martes 9 de febrero. Un grupo armado secuestró la madrugada de lunes a Anabel Flores, reportera de El Sol de Orizaba, en Veracruz. Familiares de la periodista interpusieron una denuncia donde declararon que los agresores vestían uniformes militares y llevaban armas largas, cascos, pasamontañas y chalecos antibalas. Anabel Flores, de 27 años, cubre la fuente policíaca desde 2010. Es madre de un niño de 15 días de nacido y otro de 2 años. El Comité para la Protección para los Periodistas cataloga a Veracruz como una de